Spring into action with the biggest fly fishing gear sale of the season. Jackson Hole Fly Company is thrilled to announce their spectacular 25% off anniversary sale. They are inviting all of us to celebrate with them. Whether you're a seasoned angler or just starting out, there's never been a better time to upgrade your equipment and save big. Are you looking for a rugged, waterproof sling pack or backpack to keep your gear dry throughout all the adventures this year? They have you covered. Are you in search of a new carbon fiber landing net? Top quality fly boxes, essential gear like fly lines and leaders? They have all that and more. This is your chance to grab some incredible deals and make the fishing season unforgettable. Don't wait. Dive into the savings today. Head over to jacksonholeflycompany.com and take advantage of this limited time sale. Coming up next on the Wet Fly Swing podcast.
They put me on these blood thinners so more blood would go in there. And over the course of 7 months, my heart regenerated enough for me to get the bypass. And I got the bypass a month ago. I got it a month ago. I caught a 18-inch wiper 2 weeks after open heart surgery. And I was doing good. It was the weirdest thing, though, like having tubes coming out of me. But I feel great. I didn't realize how crappy I felt before.
That was Joe Jackson with an amazing story about surviving a heart attack at a very young age. Deer hair, the VA, mushrooms, and more today on The Swing.
Welcome to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show, where you discover tips, tricks, and tools from the leading names in fly fishing today.
I wanted to give a quick shout out to an upcoming little series we have going. This year, we are bringing Phil Roy on to dig into some stillwater tips and tricks and he's going to cover what he does best. This is going to be a unique spin, something we haven't done before, so I'm excited to share this one out next year. And stay tuned for that. So if you're a stillwater person or interested in hearing from one of the best out there and hear some of his unique content, stay tuned for that. Today's episode is sponsored by Fishhound Expeditions, putting together remote Alaskan wilderness trips for that trip of a lifetime. These are not your lodge-style trips. These are not your car-style trips. This is remote, floating in, flying in at times, floating in down Alaska in the middle of nowhere, mousing for rainbows, camping out under the stars of the Alaskan sky. This is good stuff. We did a trip earlier this year, and it was amazing. You can check out these trips right now from Fishhound, wetflyswing.com/fishhound, F-I-S-H-H-O-U-N-D. Today's episode is sponsored by Eastern Idaho's Yellowstone Teton Territory, one of North America's most renowned zones for fly fishing. From the Henry's Fork to the South Fork of the Snake and all the alpine lakes in between, Yellowstone Teton Territory provides anglers and other outdoor enthusiasts all the information they need to plan their trip. Visit wetflyswing.com/Teton right now to get a full list of outfitters, lodges, fly shops, and all the inspiration you need to get started on your next Eastern Idaho trip. That's wetflyswing.com/Teton, T-E-T-O-N. Joe Jackson, a.k.a. Sergeant Bass Fisher, takes us on a wild ride through his journey around fly tying and fly fishing. We hear about how he found himself connecting with some of the greatest fly anglers and tiers around the country not long after he really got started fly tying. We hear about what these bird flies and some of these unique deer hair flies are all about and how this kind of gave him some recognition out there. And we also hear how he turned his small suburban house into a farmer's dream. We dig into that. This is really cool to hear what he has going with his family and kids there. So let's jump into it. We got an amazing story ahead for you today. So without further ado, here we go. Joe Jackson. How's it going, Joe?
Oh, not too bad. How are you this morning?
Oh, man, good. Good to, get you on the podcast here. And we're going to dig into some of your background. You've got a cool, interesting fly tying background, a story there. And you've got some cool stories. We're going to talk about some of these today around fly fishing and tying and how you tie these really unique fly patterns with deer hair. So that's something that you've done in the past. Before we jump into everything there, bring us back real quick to fly fishing. Talk about how you've kind of first got into fly fishing.
Well, I think it was 2015 or 16, and I got voluntold I needed to go to the VA for psychiatric evaluation, which kind of ticked me off. But I went in and in the elevator, there was a flyer for Project Healing Waters. And I've fished since I was like 4 years old. And so I snapped a photo of it. I was like, heck yeah, veterans and fishing, I can do that. At the time, I thought fly fishing was kind of sissy.
Yep.
But I was like, you know, it'll be fun. And as I got into it, I sold all my bait casters and kept a few spinning rods, but I pretty much just immediately was like, this is awesome. A little bluegill felt like a whale on a little fly rod.
Yeah.
And then I got into the tying through the Indianapolis program or shortly thereafter, and tied a woolly bugger at the whole group. And then I got into deer hair.
Then you got into deer hair.
Yeah, it was a fun. I'm a bass guy because I live in central Indiana, and I just wanted to fish with, you know, top water, and then the foam just felt too easy. I felt like I got too good at it real quick, and I just wanted a challenge. And as I got in a deer hair, packing it and cutting a thread and having it explode in my face really ticked me off, and felt pretty good to be ticked off at something that was inanimate.
Right.
And then I got obsessed with it. And after about 3 months of doing that, my friend Marty James here in Indiana was like, hey, you're pretty good at that. And he gave me a couple Pat Cohen DVDs and it was over.
Yeah. Pat's awesome.
And, I mean, it, like for real, like Pat, without Pat teaching everybody, I wouldn't have been doing any of this stuff because his technique was so good. And I've sort of evolved away from his technique a little bit and do my own thing. But, it was definitely my foundation, and I put a hook underneath my thumb one day packing hair with a little brassy.
Ooh.
And then my wife's like, you need to go buy one of them big green packers.
Yep.
And I was like, no, they're like $30. No way I'm spending that kind of money on a tool. And I went and did it anyway. And then, like the very first fly with that packer, I was like, holy crap, this is so freaking tight. And the packer just made the difference. And
yep.
Pretty much 7 months later, I picked up my first sponsor and I tied it to Symposium, and I've been doing the shows ever since. It's crazy.
Wow. I mean, you've been doing the show, sir. And we'll talk a little more about that. And you're talking about, so this is, yeah, Pat Cohen. He was on the podcast, his Fugly Packer, right?
Yeah, it's right here in front of me.
Yeah, the Fugly Packer. That's awesome. And that too. And I think we'll talk about that as well, because I want to dig into some on the deer hair today. I wanted to go back. You mentioned the Vol and Told to the project, or to get, you know, some help or whatever. Bring us back to a little bit, just because some of the stuff we talk about today, you know, I think it's going to be help to clarify a little bit of your background. So talk about that. How, I know there's a couple stories there, but how did you get to be where you were Vol and Told to do something here, and tell us a little about your experience. You were in one of the wars, right, that was going on?
Yeah, I went to Afghanistan and Iraq, and I got forced out like 6 years before I could retire because I hurt my neck and back. And then I wasn't very good at being a civilian. I was really quite naive to drug usage, and started dating girls as a civilian, and then like I've just found out one after another they're all strung out, and I'm like, what, I can't deal with that.
And then
I kept getting factory jobs, and I'd climb the ladder really quick to make like a manager or a team leader, and then for the same exact qualities that I would get pushed up the ladder, I'd get fired for because I just demanded excellence. I just feel like you should do the absolute best you can and try to outperform everybody around you. And it's just sort of ingrained in me being an infantry guy. And then my dad was in the infantry for 33 years. And so I grew up with that.
Wow.
I got in trouble while I was doing pushups, you know? And then, I just sort of had a mental breakdown, I guess. And, got in trouble, and they're like, look, you can, I can either press charges on you or you can go to the VA for treatment. And they got it set up for me. And it was just really rapid after that.
Yeah. So you just rolled in. And was it Project Healing Waters? Was that part of the process that helped you kind of climb out of that place you were at?
Yeah. I still go to talk to a therapist once a month, but it was three times a week then. And, I think it was 3 or 4 months in the Project Healing Waters, my therapist was like, you know, you can cut back and you don't need to come in here. She said, I pretty much found my therapy.
Oh, wow.
And it's pretty cool because all my therapists, they want to talk about Project Healing Waters a lot. And I'm like always leaving them cards to give to other veterans. And, fly fishing's not for everyone. And so, you know, there's other veteran programs I'm with that I'm always campaigning for as well.
Yeah.
That are pretty great. But, you know, I focus on the fly fishing.
That's right. Yeah, because there are quite a few. You know, Project Healing Waters is probably the biggest, but there are a number of different ones. I've talked to a few of them around the country, right? I mean, I don't know. Do you have a connection to some of those other fly fishing groups for veterans?
The Veterans Service Program in Pennsylvania, I've went out there and hung out with them a lot. Bill Nolan used to run it. I don't know who's running it now, but they're great. They actually had me out for my birthday like 3 years ago, and then they paid for my license with all the stamps in Pennsylvania for the whole year. And I hung out with their veterans, and then they had Joe Humphreys and Tom Herr out for my birthday, and we all just hung out and fished. It was insane. We were tying flies together on this hill, and you know, Joe's sitting there in a t-shirt, some pants, some blue jeans, and fleece-lined Crocs. And he was watching these four veterans not catch any fish in this pool. And he's like, "Joe, you got any hare's ear, a little size 14 scud hook and some grizzly hackle?" I'm like, "Yeah." He's like, "Tie me up six and cut the hackle all the way down." I was like, "Okay, I'll do whatever you say, boss. You're the boss." So yeah. I tied up like four of them, and then he went down there, and he, in his blue jeans and fleece lined Crocs, just walked down in there in Spring Creek, you know, 40 degree water, and took a rod from him, tied it on, and he just started nymphing like he does and catching fish, showing him how to do it. It took him 3 minutes to catch a fish after these guys were fishing it. You know, they're all new, and he saw a problem. He's like, "I'm gonna go fix it. I'm gonna show him how to catch a fish," which is what he did to me when he taught me how to nymph. He grabbed my arm, was like, and I was like, "Don't do that." He's like, "You're doing it wrong."
Yeah.
It was like, I've been so lucky in the fly fishing and with Project Healing Waters. Healing Waters has pushed me out there, and everybody's like, "How'd you get so good at tying so fast or fly fishing so fast?" I was like, "Well, I just have all these great tutors that I just meet along, and I know when to be quiet and listen to an old timer that's been doing it for 40 years."
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I think it's a problem with my generation, really, the younger guys that's coming up into it. We're watching all the YouTube videos from guys that's our age, and then it's this knowledge going back and forth. And then you got the older guys, like, I'm not, Tim Kamisa is not old, but
oh yeah,
you know, and then Tim Flagler, but you know, they have what they got going on, and it's good stuff, but a lot of people aren't watching it that I come across, particularly the younger streamer guys. But and that, I was thinking about writing an article about how my generation needs to just go join a fly club and hang out with the older dudes, because it's a wealth of knowledge that we're missing out on.
Yep. God, that's a great point.
And it'll be gone soon. All that knowledge will be gone soon, unfortunately. And I advocate for joining a local fly club. I joined the Indianapolis Flycasters about a year after I started, and which Marty James, the guy that gave me the DVD, he's a Project Healing Waters volunteer, but I might have got that DVD a few months earlier had I joined the fly club.
Oh yeah. Wow. That is, yeah, so those are all great points. I mean, Joe Humphreys, you know, we had him on a while back, and I love that story about him grabbing your arm, because that was he mentioned that George Daniel mentioned that when he was on. He said, you know, Joe would whack him in the head when he was teaching him or something like that. He'd be like, "You're doing it wrong," you know, but that was just his old, right? That was the style. He's an old guy, and that was back in the day, you know, but now it's so different. And I love what you say about, you know, we're losing that, right? So you're saying people out there, the younger kids are just kind of, they're doing their own thing, which is great. They're creating, right? They're doing stuff, but they're also missing out some of that cool tradition and some of that stuff that still works, right? We're losing some of that.
Yeah. I mean, like just a random place, you know, like West Virginia, there's probably an old timer there that fishes, and he's in a fly club. You don't talk to too many people because nobody wants to listen. You know, when he's gone, he might just have that fly that works. Or that technique for fishing a particular part of a stream that, you know, is going to be lost. And it concerns me and it bugs me. I know I haven't been doing this very long, but I just lost my mentor, Al Fish. And he was like 93, I think, 91. But he, like, as I got started, he ties it so bug roundup every year. And he knew all these people in the industry. And without me knowing it, he was emailing and writing people letters saying, hey, you should check out this guy. That's how I got on Jay Stockard.
Oh, yeah.
And he just kept nominating me for stuff. And that's how I got in the Sobug Roundup, because they denied me when I applied to tie there the first time. And then Al was like, I can't go. I'm nominating Joe. He's the only person I want. And they're like, well, we'll give him a 4-hour block to tie. And then I posted on their fly tying group and they're like, everybody got all fired up. I was going to be there. And they're like, you know what? You can tie the whole time if you want. And then my art flies like intrigued so many people and the weird stuff I'm doing that they're like, you know what? You can be a featured tire and do a class if you want.
Oh, wow.
That all happened a week before Sobug. So I've been really lucky, you know?
Yeah. What event is that? This is one of the fly tying symposia.
Yeah, it's an educational event down in Arkansas, Mountain Home. They do it in March, and it's a lot different. It's not about making money. They generate income for their fly club, and then they donate a lot of it to kids in Arkansas who are trying to go to college for something to do with natural resources.
Oh, cool.
It's neat. And it's a neat show because you tie in 4-hour blocks. You can sit wherever you want and there's just tires everywhere. So, you know, I sat across from Dave Whitlock last time.
Oh, wow.
And, and I mean, my whole wall's covered in his paintings now.
No kidding. What was that like when you had at the Dave Whitlock? Were there actually people coming in, just normal consumers coming in? And, or was it just a tire expo?
It was a tire expo, and I didn't see any too many people rolling through that wasn't, you know, already in the fly fishing industry or tires. And then another show I haven't done is Branson, and that's one that everybody keeps telling me I should do because it's an artsy town, and like people just go in there to buy art.
Oh, really?
And so I was like, you know, I could probably get into that.
And this is Branson. Remind me again for those outside of the area.
Branson, Missouri.
Okay.
It's a weird show because it's in the summer. I think it's in July. But my schedule just never lined up with it. I might do it one day, but I just, at this point, I travel so much, it has to be lucrative enough for me to, you know, at least pay for my hotel and drive.
Right. Yeah, because you're on the circuit and you have, when you mentioned the art flies and some of the stuff you have going, which, I mean, maybe we can go into that a little bit because this is an interesting topic. I mean, so you got into the Project Healing Waters. When did you start tying some of these? Maybe talk about some of the stuff people might say is different or, you know, kind of weird, like the bird flies and stuff. And when did that start? And then are you still doing a little bit of that?
I haven't done it, you know, since I got sick earlier last year, but we'll hit that later.
Yeah.
But when I first did an art fly, my daughter was like, maybe she was 3 or 4. Let's see. She's about to, yeah. So she was 3. We're sitting on the back porch of our apartment and there was a hummingbird and she pointed up to it and was like, tie a bee. She wanted me to make her a bee. And it was a hummingbird. So I just was like, okay, that's easy enough. And I just sat down and made one. And I tried to make it realistic. I didn't know that was a style of tying and that people like did that stuff. But, I took a toothpick and painted it black and then shoved it in its face after I did a little weird bomber shape. And I just, you know, I didn't tie the feathers in. I just glued them in.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And then I didn't think nothing of it. And then I got told that I placed in the top 5 in the nation in the Project Healing Waters tying contest.
Wow.
And that I was tying at the fly tying symposium. And I was like, cool. And I actually thought it was one of my buddies prank calling me and I hung up on him. And then they called me back. It was Duke Davis. He's like, don't do that again. And so I went there and they told me to bring some display flies, you know, to display what I do. And so I took a bunch of hair bugs and poppers and a few streamers. And then I took that little bird and it was sitting out front. I was sitting next to Sun Tao.
Oh yeah.
And he's the one that beat me.
Oh, wow.
So I took second to Sun. I'm not ashamed of that. And I got out there early and Bob Clouser and Joan Clouser walked past. And Joan's like, I want that. I was like, that's my daughter's, man. And I didn't even know who they really were. Sun said they were important. And so I was like, I can make you one of those, ma'am. I'll make it this evening. So I made it. I made her the second hummingbird ever. And then it was really cool. The next day, you know, I was wearing like, I had this like high fade and a beard and tattoos all over me. And I was waiting in line at Clouser's booth to give her this flower or this hummingbird. And then, you know, she was in a wheelchair and she stood up and pointed at me to come forward. And there's this line of people and they just parted like the Red Sea and was like, who is this punk?
Oh, wow.
And I walked up and gave it to her and they wanted a picture with me. It was really, really cool. But that's like my second hummingbird. And then that Sunday, the next day, I was tying out in the lobby and Joe Humphreys walked past and looked at my stuff. He's like, did you tie all these? I was like, yes, sir. And I knew who he was because I made a note to learn everybody, you know, who they were, because I was embarrassed about not knowing who freaking Bob Clouser was. And then Joe sat down with me and like was talking to me, and his daughter Dolores is like, dad, we're late. He's like, I'm 90 years old, they'll wait a little longer. And then he asked me if I'd make him one, and then Denny stayed there and chatted with me while he was doing his casting instruction class, which I was going to go to, but he asked me to tie a hummingbird for him, and I was like, I better do this.
Right.
Then I think he's got one of every bird I've ever tied. He collects my birds. It's pretty neat.
No kidding.
It's really, really cool having access to these, you know, legendary dudes like Dave Whitlock and Emily. They have one of my hummingbirds, one of my cardinals. And when I met them, I was at Sobug Roundup and Emily came over to my booth and was like, hey, Joe, Dave wants to talk to you. And I was tying an Arkansas Razorback. I've never tied one before. Someone challenged me. The dudes from Wapsie challenged me. So I was tying one and I had this crowd of people watching me. And I was like, guys, I gotta take a break. I gotta go over there right now. I can't wait.
Yeah.
And I just sat down right between them like she told me to. And Dave's like, I gotta take a break because I've been wanting to chat with this young man about deer hair. And then he commenced telling me how wrong I'm doing. It was great.
Oh, really?
He's like, your colors are too packed on your divers. The fish are going to just knock it out of the water. And I was like, no. I was like, I got this crazy huge hook gap that you didn't have with those old must heads you were using. And we were just bantering back and forth. And it was, you know, it was one of the highlights of everything I've done, just arguing about how both of our ways are right. And they're both right.
Yeah.
I couldn't tie my style on his hooks. And then his style wouldn't float as well on these heavier hooks that I'm using. So.
Oh, right. Do you use, what are the hooks you use typically for that sort of fly?
I only use Partridge, but I'm using CS86?
Yeah, okay.
Universal Predator X. I like the heavier hooks because when I tie a diver or a popper, I don't know. I know I'm going to be using it for largemouth or smallmouth, but I don't know if I'm going to end up, you know, trying to chase redfish or jacks with it. So I don't want to tie on a light wire hook that might get broken half.
Right.
Now we were catching, a few years ago, I was catching bonnet head sharks down in the Florida Keys on a diver that I tied for.
Oh, wow.
For bass, you know, and I have them generally for largemouth. I'm tying 4-0 and above because I really don't want to catch the little ones. I love them, but I'd rather just chase those 4+ pounders all the time.
Right. Right. Gosh. So those flies. So yeah, you're just packing deer hair using the Fugly Packer, and you're just kind of, what's that look like on your style? Is that kind of, if you look to some of Pat Cohen's stuff, like you said, you're similar to him, but you've tweaked it. How is it different from what he, you know, what he teaches?
He does more round of a belly. I'm cutting the belly as close as I can. And he puts just about the same amount of hair on the belly as he does the top to keep it balanced. And then, I just barely put any on the belly. I try to make it a little wider and taller, just so it agitates the water more. But I'm putting solar res on the belly, so I don't have to worry about it coming apart.
Yep.
And I don't know. I haven't tied deer hair in such a long time because of my heart issues that I'm rusty.
Right.
I tied a bomber yesterday, and I was like, man, I stink. This is a basic fly, a bomber, and I spinning hair, and it looked like I'm a first year guy.
Today's episode is sponsored by Zag.Fish, who was founded with the idea of finding ethical solutions to fly tying products and services. They've done just that by creating jobs for marginalized people, both in the U.S. and abroad. They've got everything covered. We've had a recent episode on with John Grosta, who talked about some of the great products they have with the fishing he does in Florida, with the Fairflies brushes. They've got the 5D brushes and their fly fur, which is pretty amazing. Tons of people are loving this stuff for its durability and the speed that allows you to tie flies. John talked about that on the podcast. And he said that just basically it's going to add on at least 15 to 20 minutes to each fly you tie if you're not using these brushes. Zag also has Wasatch custom angling tools in their satchel with over 50 custom heirloom tools that go along with your materials. So they are a true do-it-yourself company, and you got to check out zag.fish right now. If you want to, you can head over to wetflyswing.com/zag. And you can get 20% off your first order by clicking through that link. And let them know you heard of them through this podcast, and you'll get that 20% discount right now. That's wetflyswing.com/zag, Z-A-G. Okay, back to the show.
You know, we don't have to dig too deep into this, but I think this might shed some light on where you're at too. But so you had a heart attack here in the last year. Take us there a little bit. Tell that story.
So I was at the Edison show, Ben from Miski's show in Edison, New Jersey. And the show was over. It was a great show. There was some crap weather, but like we had a great turnout considering, you know, post-COVID and, well, still COVID a little bit. And the show was over. I was tying flies for my friend from Kenya. For tiger fish, I was tying like 8-aught hair bugs. They're like 12 inches long in the lobby of a 5-star Marriott and just destroying the place. And they're like, that's fine. That's fine. I was like, I'll vacuum it up. The ladies are like, no, that's fine. You got people watching you. So,
yeah.
You know, Thomas Bolts was out there watching me, my friend Omron, my friend Randy, and there was a group of us. And my chest just started hurting. This is like 11 o'clock at night. We're drinking rum and scotch, which apparently helped me out. Oh. I go outside. I'm a dumb infantry guy. I didn't know what was happening to me. I told Omron to take over tying that fly for me. And I went outside and there was a blizzard going on. It dropped like 7 inches of snow overnight.
Wow.
I'm just standing out front of this Marriott and I just start beating the crap out of my chest like a dumb gorilla. And then like my whole chest was purple and blue the next day.
Wow.
But it made the pain go away. I didn't know what was happening. I just know my chest started hurting really bad. And then I had this crazy impending doom. And I didn't know what to do. So I just beat the crap out of my chest.
Huh.
Then they didn't want to weigh. And I went back to tying flies and drinking scotch. And then we all went to bed and we drove 12 hours home back to Indiana. And then when I got home and settled in, it happened again and went to the ER. And said it was nothing. And then I go to the ER 7 days later. They said it's nothing. Then I go to the VA and they're like, you're having heart attacks.
Huh.
Your LAD is 100% clogged. And other than that, I was 100% physically fit. They looked in my arteries and did all these tests. And there was like no cholesterol buildup or plaque. And they found that it was just a fluke thrombus inside my LAD artery. It was 100% clogged. They had no idea how I was still walking around and driving.
Wow.
Everywhere. I had 4 heart attacks total.
4.
And then once they figured it out what it was, I had all these little vessels on my heart called collateral vessels. And it's whenever your heart's starved for oxygen, it'll start creating these little vessels. And I guess I'm such a hard charger is what the doctor said that I just have these little vessels all over. They don't pump blood in the heart, but it allows blood to seep in it. And that's what kept me alive the whole time. And once my doctors at the VA in Indianapolis figured that out, they put me on 2 types of blood thinners to make it easier. So my heart, because there was so much damage in there that I couldn't get a bypass. And they put me on these blood thinners so more blood would go in there. And over the course of 7 months, my heart regenerated enough for me to get the bypass, and I got the bypass.
Oh, wow.
A month ago. I got it a month ago.
Holy cow.
I caught a 18-inch wiper 2 weeks after open heart surgery.
Jesus.
And I was doing good. It was the weirdest thing though, like having tubes coming out of me. And but I feel great. I didn't realize how crappy I felt before.
Yeah.
Because I was couch ridden. You know, I had to admit to my boys when we were out digging a hole in the yard for some reason. I was like, guys, you know, and they're all under 15. I was like, guys, you're stronger than me right now, so you have to dig this hole. I can't do it.
Huh.
But you wouldn't believe how much pep it put in their step when I admitted that they're just stronger than me.
That's right. That's right. Wow.
The worst part about it is I'm not allowed to fly fish till like January.
Oh, shoot.
And I just started tying again a few days ago, tying some flies for my buddy, Josh Franklin. He does portraits and he's a sketch artist. He sketched a portrait of me holding a carp I caught. And then he sketched one of my daughter. So I'm tying a big horde of flies, for him. I actually missed my deadline. He's in Montana right now. So I'll have to give them to him when he gets back. And then
there you go.
This morning, right now I'm tying some intruder flies. So my lead surgeon, fun little story, her mentor, who's now retired, retired heart surgeon, all he does is fly fish, spay in Alaska and the Pacific Northwest. So I'm tying some intruder flies and some Dalai Lamas. The Dalai Lamas are a really good fly to get back into when I'm
right.
You know, worrying about thread control and technique with having my sternum completely cut in half. You know, my chest is weak and it's weird, but it's a really good fly. I probably won't be able to do deer hair properly for another week.
Gotcha.
I can't wait to get back at it though. Oh man.
Wow. So you're jonesing that at getting back into the deer hair.
Besides a bomber I tied yesterday, I think the last time I tied a deer hair fly was at Sobug in March.
Uh-huh.
And that was right after all my heart attack things started happening. And then as that progressed, I just kept getting weaker and weaker to where I could get up and I could go sit on my couch.
Right.
And wow. I've never been a big video game guy, but I sit there and just played video games and watch YouTube till my brain was fried. It felt like,
God. Yeah. This whole story is obviously your whole story is pretty crazy here. Some of it's hard to, you know, to comprehend. Right. But I don't want to dig deep into the hospital stuff and all that, but I do know it's a good reminder for everybody that, getting a second opinion. You know, my daughter had a similar thing. She fell off when she was, this was 3 years, you know, she was probably like seven, fell off mm-hmm. of the out in the backyard and her head hit the concrete. And we took her to the hospital and they're like, oh yeah, nothing, you know. We don't see anything, you know, nothing, you know, and they did x-rays and everything. And we got a second opinion and, you know, went into the bigger city and they're like, yep, there's a fracture on her cranium.
Oh no.
You know what I mean? So she's totally fine now and everything. She's great. She's amazing. But it was just a reminder like, wow. I mean, you know, it's like, damn, so you just like, you know, they missed it, right? They missed it. If we wouldn't have followed up, you never know. But again, it's that reminder, I think. And it sounds like the same thing for you that, you know, literally you were having multiple heart attacks and they missed that. And the VA, there again is the power of actually having, right, second opinion, having a powerful people that know their stuff.
Yeah. And it really just saved the VA saved my life. And a lot of people just, brush the VA off as like a second class citizen.
Mm.
They really, it was world class. They were sending me out to other hospitals to, get echoes, and I got a cath done, and oh man, I was like a test subject. It seemed like for a while, I was like, are they trying to make me better? Or are they studying me because I'm still alive?
Right.
At the same time, you know, the first hospital that, you know, in their defense, I'm a fairly muscular fit dude, and, coming in there looking like crap at 1 a.m, I probably look suspicious, I suppose, but I'm on the mend. I'm feeling great. I don't have to go to the VA anymore.
Oh, nice.
They wanted me to come in every 2 weeks for, you know, checkups with my surgeons and get x-rays done and then blood work done. And last Wednesday, which will been it's a month now, 27th of October was a month. And they're already like, you don't have to come back. They're like, we'll see you in a year.
No kidding.
They're like, you can fly fish whenever you think you're ready. And right now, you know, I fell down a little and caught myself the other day, and I think I re-cracked my sternum.
Oh.
So, you know, it's wired together, so it's not going to come apart. But we got to wait for that bone to completely fuse before I can really use my upper body. And one of my surgeons grew up in Utah, and he was telling me how he grew up fly fishing out of a belly boat for cutthroats in these high mountain lakes. And it was pretty cool. He knew who I was. And he told the surgical team not to mess up because I was famous, which I thought was funny. But.
Yeah. Yeah. So you're coming back and we're circling around now. It's cool because, I mean, the show season, which sounds like you're a big part of that, as that comes around, are you planning on attending a few of those shows as we head to the new year?
I've got a booth at the symposium in 2 weeks, and I 100% plan on going, but if I mess up my chest again, I won't be able to go because I can't drive. If I mess my chest up, I can't drive at all. I can't do the turning of the steering wheel and looking over my shoulder to check. It just wouldn't be safe. So
no.
So as long as I don't hurt myself again, I'll be at the symposium. And I have a big fly planned, deer hair fly. I can't talk about, but it's for someone at the symposium. I'm gonna give away at the banquet.
Oh, nice. Well, talk about that fly. So as you're making this thing and just when you pack, so do you have any videos out there? People can kind of watch what you do here.
I don't. I have one really crummy video I put on YouTube, but I was in the right when all my heart stuff went down. I was right in the process of getting into doing tutorials.
And oh,
I do live videos. I do live feeds. I did live feeds all the time on my Instagram, but I was wanting to get into more of the production style tying videos. And then I was actually about to launch a YouTube channel for like educational part of fly fishing. And I had a whole bunch of trips planned with guides. I think it was like 12 trips. I was going to go on for free, like 3-day guided trips so we can film and actually teach people. And there's not much of it online, but I want to like teach people how to read water and how different guides prepare for a guided trip or fish in new water. And my template was going to be, we're going to be having breakfast or dinner the night before, and we're going to film the planning process with a map. And then we're going to go into the day of fishing, 3 days of fishing. And, you know, right at the beginning of the video, let everybody know what our plan is, what our secondary plan is, and see if they work. And then how we adapt if our plan isn't working and why we're using the flies, how we're using them, how we're reading the water for each, you know, species of fish. Because a brown trout's different in every stream.
Mm-hmm.
And that kind of had to be canceled once I had to sit on my couch for 7 months.
Right. Yeah, I gotcha. So that's still out there. So maybe we'll have some of that in the future, right? As you get back into this, maybe we'll dig. And I guess people can probably just go look at a Pat Cohen. We had him on the podcast a while back, and we can put a link out to some of his stuff. Because, yeah, I mean, obviously you learned from him. Your stuff is a little bit different now. But the style of packing the deer hair and then trimming it. But talk about how you're gluing. So you're, instead of putting the material, the wings and stuff in you're actually gluing them on?
Yeah. For my fishing flies, I don't glue them on because I want them to be more sturdy. But I usually don't put wings on a hair bug.
Oh, right.
But with my art stuff, I want it to be absolutely flawless and super realistic. And it's way like my hummingbirds. It's easier just to trim out a couple feathers the way I want them and then just stick them in the sides with some super glue and they'll stay forever.
Mm. Yeah.
Like I tied a Wendigo, which is like a Native American lore, creepy cryptid or something. I tied one for Halloween a few years back for a fly tying contest. And, I actually got banned from the fly tying contest. I was a judge that year.
Oh, really?
People were.
What? Now, why'd you get banned?
Well, I mean, I understand like the professional fly tier joining an amateur fly tying contest isn't very classy.
Oh yeah.
But I did it in exhibition. I did it on purpose for fun. But there was people being grumpy about it, so I pulled it off. But so I took black bucktail for the antlers. This is like a deer skull with antlers. And I actually burnt my fingers doing this, but I actually took black bucktail and I coated it in solar res and just twisted it up and crinkled it. Then I had my solar res resonator light in my mouth. And then I want to hold it up at the deer hair to get it to harden. And then I just kept adding antlers onto it. It's one of the kids' favorite flies when I run at shows until I did a baby Yoda.
Oh.
Baby Yoda. Like every little kid gets a picture with baby Yoda. Bob Fosler's really? Got a picture of a baby Yoda.
So you have a baby Yoda that's tied the same thing using the same kind of technique.
Yeah, I just, you know, the hardest part's his ears. I just tie a big round melon head, give him some eyes and shape it out, and then I stick the ears in the side, and then the body's just a square body that I sort of trimmed into a cylinder. Then I take dragon tails and actually make the cuffs of his clothes, so I don't have to like try to get any technical stuff. I had to learn how to tie that fly really fast because the first time it took me 6 hours, and everybody keeps trying to buy them from me.
Huh.
So I like make them outrageous price so I don't have to do it again.
Wow.
But I put like a $200 price tag on it, and people are still trying to buy it from me. And so I'm like, crap, I got to learn how to tie this in 2 to 4 hours.
No kidding. So you're, and I see it now. I'm on Instagram on sgt.bassfisher on Instagram. People can take a look on, yeah, you did this a while back. That's so cool. Yeah, man. It's like, so that's all deer hair, the whole body, everything on that thing.
Yeah. Besides the resin, the dragon tail and the eye.
And the eyes.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are the eyes? Yeah, it's some sort of a little bead or something.
It's like a rhinestone.
Oh, nice. Yeah, it's a rhinestone.
So I can just put them right in there, and then I could put a bead of solar rays on it and give them that round appearance.
Oh,
and
right.
If I want, I can take like some colored resin and put it right on that little circle that where the hole is in the rhinestone, and it'll hold there. And then I can give it a, you know, hit that and then throw some clear over it and give it a pupil with like 3-dimension pupil.
Wow.
I'm a nerd.
So the Yoda is one of your biggest. Is that one of your most popular ones?
I think the most likes I ever got was my kingfisher. It got like 2,000 likes or something.
Oh, wow.
2,500. I don't know. It was crazy when I posted that. You know who Dwayne Hata is?
No. Uh-uh.
He's a really cool artist down in Arkansas. And I was going to tie him a kingfisher for his wife. It's her favorite bird. And then Dave Whitlock wanted a cardinal, or Emily Whitlock wanted the cardinal, and I had to tie her one. And then Tony Spezio wanted a kingfisher, and I didn't have enough time to do all that. And I tied a hummingbird for the governor of Arkansas.
Hmm.
And then tied an Arkansas razorback for the owners of Wapsie. So I didn't have time. So I ended up, Dwayne was going to trade me one of his art prints of a smallmouth bass. But I was like, when I ran out of time, I was like, dude, you have to take the original. I don't have time. So this is the very first, and I keep all my originals, all the, you know, the very first ones I ever do. And I ended up giving him the original kingfisher. And so the print I wanted was a smallmouth bass, and he actually gave me the original to it. It was really cool.
Nice. And you've done a bunch of, you know, different things here. I'm just looking through your feed. This is cool. Yeah. And so what do you, you know, I mean, you're going to be getting back in the deer hair tying, you know, soon. And, you know, as you're looking out, is that the thing you're most excited about? I mean, we haven't even talked about fishing yet, but that's, you know, I'm sure another part of it. But is the tying the deer hair stuff your favorite, or do you love the fishing of those flies?
I love fishing them. I love tying them. And I got frustrated with tying because like, it just like, I don't know how to say it without sounding arrogant, but it got boring to me because it was getting too easy. And you know how ADHD is when something just gets monotonous, I can't even do it. But I was doing it. I mean, plus I've tied like 15,000 flies that year.
Wow.
For my online shop. It was crazy, but, I got bored of it. And so I just wasn't doing as well with it. And then I got into trout flies. I'm like a closet trout guy. It's funny. It's the funniest joke. There's a guy in Missouri that was looking at my deer hair stuff, and he told me I was a waste of talent because I do bass flies. And he was serious too, you know.
Right. That's hilarious.
Like Joe Humphreys makes fun of me for being Sergeant Bass Fisher. My birthday cake, he put Sergeant Trout Fisher and told me that when I'm a man, I can be Sergeant Trout Fisher.
Oh man, that's great.
And then I told Joe that deer hair bugs are the same as trout flies. Dry flies, except for men. I thought he was going to kick me in the face.
Nice.
But, you know, that's fun little banter, but this dude was being mean.
Wow.
And he didn't know that I tie trout flies. I'm a closet trout fly guy. So I was like, well, we got rising over. I was like, we can, let me tell you, uphill morning done or call like call hill. And he's like, yeah. He's like, but they're a size 18. He's like, I don't even imagine you have those hooks. And I did. I always have a little trout box with me if I get frustrated with tying it. And I watched a ton of Tim Kamisa's videos. And one of my best friends, Lee Barbie, is a trout guy and has coached me through a lot of it. And so I just knocked out this perfect little, well-proportioned little 18 hill morning done.
Wow. Was...
Then I gave it to him. Then I went back to tying 6-aught hair bugs.
Damn. So you, that is pretty impressive because, yeah, some people might see, I mean, obviously the hair stuff is tough. What you're doing is so unique. But, I mean, tying tiny dry flies, I mean, for me as well, for a lot of people, is not easy to do. And but you feel like, do you feel like you're as competent at those as you are tying the bass stuff, the hair bugs?
I don't know the names of the insects, but I know the pattern names. And when someone, I can look it up and I'm not as well-versed because I don't have them. We have some like gray drakes here in Indiana that come out of lakes and midges and stuff, but that's about it.
Oh, that's about it, right?
So I'm learning pretty rapidly. Guys like John Collins out in, on the East Coast, he's posting flies all the time I'm looking at, like the actual little critters. And so I tie a lot of sulfurs.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm still learning all that stuff because I didn't catch a trout until like 3 years or 4 years ago.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Cause you're in Indiana. There's not a heck of a lot of trout fishing. What's the nearest, where are you heading if you want to like go to trout fishing nearby?
Well, we got Stalkies in Indianapolis.
Oh, okay.
And then, we in a little creek in Indy, and then we have Brookville Tailwater, which I think everybody loves it, but I think it's garbage.
Huh.
It's like, I'd said that in the other podcast I did. And I got a lot of flack here in Indy for saying that, but
oh, really?
it's so overfished, and I feel bad for the fish because that's the only decent like tailwater we have for 4 hours.
Mm.
And so
yeah, that's it.
Those guys are just, those little fish are just beat the crap out of. And
yeah,
you know, someone will catch a nice 20-inch brown, and I'm like, man, it looks like it's punk rocker with all those holes in its face, you know?
Man. Right. So, yeah. So, but the bass fishing, like smallmouth bass fishing, that's pretty decent around your area.
Oh yeah. We have great smallmouth bass fishing here in Indiana. And then a largemouth too. I'm kind of spoiled because I get to fish some private property for largemouth. So, you know, we've caught 6, 7, 8 pound largemouth out of there. I think my biggest one was 9.3 pounds.
Jeez.
And it was on like an 11 inch game changer. It was really fun. I was in a float tube, a Cumberland float tube. And usually bass will fight for 40 seconds. And then it's like, I give up. This thing pulled me around for a minute. And I was like, I thought I had a carp. That's another thing that's great in Indiana's carp fishing.
Oh, yeah. You got lots of good carp fishing.
Yeah, it's everywhere. And then we have those crummy Asian carp are here now.
Oh, right.
So me and my buddy, my redneck buddies were out there. If it's too hot to fish for anything, ethically. You know, if it's too hot, a smallmouth will die when you catch it.
Oh, right.
Unless you're overweight in your rod. And I'm really concerned with, you know, the welfare of the fish that I catch. I don't want to be trying to chase 20-inch smallmouth with a 4-weight, you know.
Yeah.
I'd rather use an 8-weight that's a little large for that species and get it in fast and get it released in good condition, you know.
Yeah.
I love the fight, but I don't want to fight him to death because I'll always win. You know, we're anglers. We'll always win.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
So I feel better about myself and my fishing when I'm overweight in my rod a little bit.
Yeah, that's a good tip.
Yeah, I mean, it's not very, most people are thinking I'm goofy when I'm out fly fishing for bluegill with a 7-weight.
Right. But, do you guys have, is Indianapolis in, I mean, carp, do you have stuff right in the city around? I know we did an episode with a couple weeks ago in Arizona, kind of urban carp fishing. And it was pretty cool hearing like, you know, they're fishing like right off these waterways and stuff. What's it like there?
Yeah. I live like 30 minutes south of Indy, but we have really good fishing downtown. There's a canal and you used to be able to fish there, but I know there's carp, smallmouth in it. I know we have spotted bass as well. Great bluegill population. Those long ear sunfish are super fun to catch on light tackle. You know, they're super bright orange here with a lot with really awesome turquoise outlines. But Fall Creek runs around Indianapolis, and that's a really good smallmouth creek, and it's surprisingly clean. Indianapolis a few years ago implemented a system underneath the city that catches all the rainwater, and then it's all processed before it goes back into the river.
Oh, wow.
So it's really improved the water clarity and all the garbage that was in it. And it's just really made it a lot nicer, especially me being south of Indy. I can really tell the difference.
Today's episode is sponsored by Range Meal Bars, made by a small team of passionate outdoor enthusiasts. The Range team only uses the highest quality gluten-free ingredients, and they know they want to fuel your body with the right stuff. We did a recent episode where we talked about backpacking and packing your pack and getting ready for might be a hike into a high mountain lake. And we talked about the power of food and getting the right food in your pack and how important that is to shaving off weight. And this bar packs a punch with 700 calories. This is a super dense bar, tastes good. And it's exactly what we were talking about in that episode. So you can pretty much throw one bar in there if you had to. To be honest, this thing would probably make you through a couple of meals. I eat these things whenever I need to, and usually one chunk of this, one bite, will keep me going for quite a while. So it's quite a bit different now that I've been snacking on these for a while, definitely than pretty much all the other meal bars because of the caloric intake. And this is important when you're out there for safety or on the water, or just staying from that, keeping that stomach from growling. Like I said, Range Bar is small enough to fit in your hand and slides easily into your pocket of your vest or sling pack, anything you need. They currently have two flavors. One is chocolate coffee, and the other is molasses ginger sea salt. You can check out Range right now at wetflyswing.com/range. RANGE. Range Meal Bars. You won't go back to the normal bar. Okay, back to the show.
Well, a couple more things I wanted to touch on here, and we talked, I guess, at the start off air, but you've got a group of younger people, some kids that are in your kind of your audience. Talk about that, some of the stuff you do or that you've done in the past and maybe that you're going to be doing here. What is it? You do some educational stuff?
I'm the CEO of a 501c3 nonprofit that hasn't ever got to do anything because we're called Screen Time to Stream Time. And I went to visit my wife at work one day. She works downtown, and there's these two little minority girls sitting there playing in the dirt between the crack of the sidewalk, and they were trying to plant a dandelion that they had cut. So I squat down and started chatting with them, and they were talking about nature and stuff, but that crack in the sidewalk with the dirt in it was their nature.
Wow.
You know, when I told them how to dry out the dandelion and pull the seeds out and plant them in that crack, which probably irritated the people that lived there. I walked off, and I was sitting there thinking. I had to walk like six blocks. And I was like, man, these little kids that live in these inner cities are completely robbed of nature. I'm a redneck. I grew up running the woods and, you know, hitting up farm ponds.
Oh, yeah.
And it was a different time then. If I would knock on someone's door to go fishing at their pond, they'd be like, yeah. And then at noon, they would make me come in and eat a sandwich. You know, it was a different time then.
Yeah.
And so one of my best friends, Omron, works at an IU property called Bradford Woods. And they have all the schools down here go to their property to fish and learn about the outdoors. But I wanted to, like, those kids have to pay, you know, they have to pay a fee to go there with the school and all that stuff. And I wanted to make something where I can just get kids that, you know, need to be outdoors. And I think all kids need to be outdoors, but kids that are troubled, we'll take them to a camp and we'll pay for it. And we'll get them outfitted with some fly fishing gear and not just the fly fishing, but all aspects of the outdoors, obviously focusing on fly fishing and fly tying. But I just feel like these inner city kids are being completely robbed, and, you know, some of them go down the wrong path, and I'm like, man,
yeah,
if I gave them a hobby like fly fishing and fly tying, they won't have the money to go down the wrong path.
Exactly.
And so, you know, most of my sponsors know about it, and it's been slow because we got our 501c3, I think a month before COVID.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Actually went down. And so we've been waiting for it to really just simmer down so we can launch. And I think we're going to launch our first camp in the spring is our plan. And I think it's going to actually be in Ohio. until we can, you know, raise the funds and get our own little piece of property with a pond so we can get kids out there pan fishing.
Gotcha. So that's it. So basically the focus would be going into some of the inner city places where kids are just struggling and take them out and get them connected to nature, basically.
Yeah. And it wouldn't just be inner city. That was my main focus. And, but we would go to most school districts and try to find groups of kids that would want to go out. We would pay for all of it. Once I can start fundraising, it's going to be easy because us fly fishers were kind. I give as many nonprofits as I can. We just are kind. It's a kind group of people. They're very giving. So I'm not even worried about funding. And as soon as we're ready, that'll happen.
Yeah. You have lots of support for that for sure. I mean, all those groups, I can't even think of, I know there's lots of them out there that are doing stuff with kids, and it's critical because some of those kids never even know, like you said, they've never even been out on a river, have no idea. So that's cool. Well, we'll keep in touch with you, you know, as we're, you know, moving ahead, and definitely I want to circle back. Before we hop out of here, I want to touch on, I heard about the mushrooms, which is something I'm not a mushroom expert, but I love mushrooms. And I know, I think you have some experience, right? You're a kind of a, what's the person called that's a mushroom hunter?
I think I just call them mushroom hunters, but like a mushroom scientist is a mycologist.
Oh, mycologist. Yeah.
So yeah, I'm not a mycologist. I have like 30 books on it. My brother and I are sort of health nerds. And so we're always out looking for stuff in season. And right now we've got, let's see, Grifola fondosia, which is the hen of the woods. And then Pleurotus austriatus is one of the types of oyster mushrooms. They're out plentifully right now. And then Ganoderma lucidum is reishi. It's a really good, good health mushroom. And all these mushrooms have, oh man, we done went down a rabbit hole.
Oh yeah.
These mushrooms are like super healthy. They've have, like a lot of them have anti-cancer properties, like long chain polysaccharides. Mm-hmm. And then like a Termites versicolor is a little woody mushroom that you would make a tea out of after you dried it. But it, and they're every state, but they're like a blood cleaner. It's weird. Like a blood purifier. And I had a friend in Ohio that had a terminal kidney cancer. And he hit me up, and I met this dude in a veterans video game on our phone that we would just, and he was my enemy. And we were in a leadership meeting, and it was funny. And it's a stupid phone game. And this dude hit me up when someone said something about mushrooms, and I started being a nerd. And he's like, hey, and he told me his issue, and he lives right there in Illinois. So I was like, yeah, I'll come talk to you. And me and my brother drove to Illinois, and we coached him on mushrooms and eating like wild foods. And that was like his last ditch effort. And, I don't know what happened, but, he's still alive. This was like 4 years ago. He's doing a lot better. And I just taught him how to make tinctures.
Right. 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 Yeah. Mushrooms are, I mean, there's all sorts of powerful, even like you hear a lot about the microdosing stuff out there, which is, I don't know much about that, but you hear about, you know, it's the power. It's mushrooms are a medicine. I mean, it's, you know what I mean? Not only is it a good food, but it's a medicine, right?
Yeah, it is. They're really tasty too. A lot of them are really, really tasty. Lion's mane is a nootropic. It actually helps build brain cells that are, you know, they don't have those neural synapse anymore. Helps rebuild those. And I know they sell pills of it, but it has to be extracted with alcohol and then hot water bath to get the medicine. And so drinking it as a tincture, you actually get the good stuff, or cooking it in butter, you get those good stuff. And the pills they sell, you're not even getting 15% of it because they kill most of it. And it has to bind to a fat to get in your bloodstream.
Yeah.
And so a lot of that crap's gimmick. It's better just to pick up a book, learn a little bit about them, and then hit the woods, get some exercise and look for them.
Exactly. That's what's fun about it. Yeah. Getting out there. What would be your tip for people wanting to go out mushroom hunting? You probably have a book, or what would you tell somebody that wants to like really would love to get into it, but they don't know enough about it.
Look up Trad Cotter from Mushroom Mountain. He's in, I think he's in North Carolina. He's got videos and a lot of good books, and he actually grows them. That's where my brother went to one of his clinics. I think it was in Chattanooga. And cause we grow our own mushrooms as well. Like none of those things, None of the psilocybes. I got to throw it out there. We don't grow the psilocybe.
Yeah. Yeah, sure, sure. No, don't call you for the the hallucinogenic ones.
Every time I talk about mushrooms to people in public, they're like, oh, psilocybin. I'm like, no, no, we don't need none of those.
No, we don't need more of those, right?
It's pretty easy. You can grow most mushrooms on just your yard clippings.
Oh, wow.
And coffee grounds and straw.
Yeah.
Rye berry. And if you can create a sterile environment to inoculate the stuff and clone the mushrooms, you can grow mushrooms yourself. And I do it in 5 gallon buckets with straw, and they're really tasty, and they got a lot of good vitamins and minerals. And obviously, you know, going out in the wild and getting them where they're growing off, you know, an oak is way better than growing them yourself. They still taste the same, but the mineral content and the vitamins are better from the wild.
Sure.
Get out there and hike and find them and burn some calories. It's good for you too.
That's what's great. That's awesome. All right, cool. We have a little connection to somebody we could follow up with. You mentioned your brother a little bit. Let's take it out here with that. I love the, you know, kind of, I've got a few brothers as well. It sounds like you guys are pretty tight. How's that been? Are you guys still in touch quite a bit?
Yeah, he lives upstairs at my house.
Oh, wow. There you go. So, that makes it easy.
So we have an extra bedroom, and, you know, with me going to shows all the time and traveling a lot to fish, you know, he helps pay bills and he helps us with the kids and helps us with, we grow a lot of our own food. We have like a hydroponics unit and a greenhouse, a bunch of raised beds.
Oh, wow.
I grow my own quail, ducks, chickens, rabbits.
Holy cow. So you've got a, it sounds like a farm out there.
Sort of a mini farm. We only have 0.59 acres and we've sort of been doing pretty good with it.
Growing
a lot
amazing.
Of money. So I saved us money, and I tried to explain to the kiddos because, you know, dispatching a bunny is terrible. Every single time it's terrible. But I explained to the kids, I was like, look, we spoil our bunnies and our chickens. And it's just better than buying an animal or buying meat at a store that you don't know where it came from. You don't know if it hung upside down for 45 minutes before, you know, it got dispatched. So we baby them, and it's just good. Hopefully we can expand where you can have a couple cows down the road. And
no kidding. Oh, expand. Yeah. Like get a little more property and get some cows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. So what's the secret tip there on, you know, 0.59 acres and having all that going on? Is there must be some good, again, is that a YouTube thing? Hop out there and follow somebody who's kind of doing, seems challenging.
I don't know. We wing it. And I have like, are your properties unique, I guess. It's sort of rounded, but you know, we got a bunch of fruit trees at the bottom of the hill, sort of just about like a hedge grow, and then we have a grapevine trellis on the back of the property, and then we have a pit that we dug a pit for the kids' trampoline. And then we have, I think I have 900 square feet chicken coop and duck pen. And then our duck pond, you know, ducks are super gross and they're constantly their water, you need something. And so we built an aquaponics unit. It's not completely done yet, but we're actually using aquaponics to clean the duck pond out. And then in the tanks underneath the aquaponics unit, we're going to be growing tiger prawns so that every year in the fall, we can just have a big party and give everybody like some giant mushrooms. And we try to hang out. We got a really good tight knit group of friends here in Southern Indiana, and we hang out and fish a lot and just have random parties where we just sit around the campfire and let the kids be wild.
Oh, that sounds great. Yeah, you got the campfire, of course. You got a campfire there as well.
Oh, yeah. And then the hardest part is in the winter. You know, we gotta keep our bunnies and our quail warm. And we just started the whole quail thing. I couldn't find any good soft hackles that were really tiny. And so, you know, I got to go on this really cool trip to Texas, and the owner gave us like bacon wrapped quail, and I was like, that's so delicious. And so I started growing my own like Japanese quail, and I got like 7 or 8 different colors. And so I haven't started culling them yet, but because I'm sort of just expanding my little flock. But once I get it expanded and we start culling them off, I'm going to start giving away the, those little soft tackles, because they're skins. Because I don't ever want to get into selling material. It is a pain. Yeah.
Right.
But I can give them away all day long.
Yeah.
Which is what I do with my chickens. I accidentally got some Cree last year. I can't figure out how I did it. But I had like 4 Cree. You know, and then it's not whiting quality. It's pretty much just game changer quality.
Right.
But
right.
I had all these Cree roosters just running around. It was insane.
Yeah. So what is your, this is really cool that you're painting this picture. So what is your, you know, your day, kind of your daily look? I know it's kind of been crazy for you with everything you have been going, but it sounds pretty cool. I mean, you're obviously recovering from everything, but it sounds like you got a really cool place just to kind of kick back and be in nature.
Yeah. It's pretty chaotic.
Is it?
Here. We live in a little not a subdivision. We're out in the middle of nowhere, but, there's a big mansion on the hill behind me. That's like a Christian ministry, like retreat. And then all my neighbors are older couples and they just love us. I'm constantly giving them eggs. I'm getting like 4 dozen eggs a day. So we're constantly giving them all eggs and then whatever excess, you know, vegetables we have, we give them. And, they just love our kids. Our like old neighbors will be like, "Hey, we just made some cake. Can the kids come over and have some cake and play badminton?" I'm like, "Absolutely. Get them out of my house. I need silence."
Yeah.
So it's really great. When we do move, it's going to be heartbreaking. One of our neighbors like told us if we move, let us know and they'll buy property adjacent to us so we can get a bigger property.
There you go. There you go. This is so cool. Well, you've definitely made a dent. Sounds like you're making a dent on the world in your neighborhood as well. It's going to be fun. You know, Joe, definitely keeping up with you. I want to keep following you here and see what you have going. Maybe we can get you on later on next year or so and kind of do a kind of review kind of thing, see how things are going. Does that sound good? Do you want to come back on and give us an update here in a year or something like that?
Oh, absolutely. I feel like I got so much more maturing to do because I'm still brand new and I've 7 years I've been doing this since I started with Project Healing Waters, and I'm constantly learning. I got tons of books I need to sit down and read.
Yep.
And all my little projects I got going on, hopefully they keep expanding and I'm doing good and just teaching people. I love teaching. I was a sergeant for a long time and that's my main job, is to teach people and keep them alive. But
yep,
I just want to teach people and get them on the water now.
There you go. All right. Well, we'll everybody listening here, like we said before, Sergeant Bass Fisher, that's SGT.BassFisher on Instagram. And we'll send everybody out there. And yeah, Joe, I just, thanks. I want to say thanks for coming on here and telling your story. I know we dug into a few topics. You got a lot going, but it's really good to hear, you know, you're getting healthy, and I'll definitely check back with you at a later point. And we'll talk a little more. Maybe we'll dig more into the deer here and see how the farm's going.
Absolutely.
All right, Joe. Well, thanks again. We'll keep up with you and talk to you soon.
Thank you. Tight lines, man.
So there it is. You can head over to wetflyswing.com/384. 384 is going to get you, like always, show notes, links, bunch of bonuses. I'm sure there's going to be a video and you can check out some of these bird flies, see what Joe's been tying over the years and what really put him on the map. Quick listener shout out before we get out of here. Ben Mackerel, longtime listener of the podcast, he noted that he sent an email and he said he particularly liked the recent episode with David Lamb Broughton and Brian O'Keefe. He says he loves the podcast because of the great information, the tips, and provides the emphasis on the DIY tips especially. Love it. Love it, Ben. Thanks for checking in. I love that you are interested in the DIY. The two episodes you noted for sure were big ones, New Zealand, and of course, Brian O'Keefe traveling around all over the place. So appreciate you for your support. If you want to connect with me, you can send an email, dave@wetflyswing.com right now, and you can join the group there and get connected. And I can reach out to you with a quick email and answer your questions or provide some information for an upcoming episode. This is definitely a crazy episode and a really amazing story about Joe and what he's done here. And I want to make sure you, if you get a chance, reach out to Joe and let him know where you heard about him, if this is new, or maybe you already knew Joe and the story. It's a great one. And I look forward to staying in touch with Joe. Like we said, I want to check back in a year or less and see how everything's going and maybe what we can do to continue to help him. So we are at 384 is now behind us. We are going to be doing
even more episodes as we move forward here. So keep up with us if you have any ideas or thoughts. Like I said at the start, we've got this cool season upcoming with Phil Rolle. This is going to be a mini series we're going to be testing out, where Phil is going to come on and actually do some interviews. He's going to do some of his own content he's going to bring on here, and it's just going to be our way to basically provide more value. I mean, bringing you the best people each week is what we've always prided ourselves on, and now I think we've got another opportunity to actually dig deeper into some of the people behind these episodes. So let me know what you think. I would love to hear from you. We're going to launch this out, I think, early next year. If we get a chance, we might sneak one in over the holiday season. I'm not even sure. I'm talking to my future self now. I'm going to take a look really quick and see tentatively when we have this scheduled to come out. Is actually, this is coming out pretty quick. So this is going to be coming out just during the holiday season. And the holiday season is kicking off here. So we got Thanksgiving around the corner. And then we've got, I mean, pretty much after Thanksgiving, it's all like holiday madness, I think, especially if you have kids. But yeah, I'd like to hear from you again, dave@wetflyswing.com. Hope you are having a good day. And I would love to connect with you on an upcoming trip on the water somewhere if we get a chance. And definitely appreciate the support over the years. All right. Hope you are having a good afternoon, a good evening, or good morning wherever you are in the world. And I look forward to talking with you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Wet Fly Swing Fly Fishing Show. For notes and links from this episode, visit wetflyswing.com.